I'm Dustin Lanier. I'm the founder of Civic Initiatives. I'm a certified public procurement officer, and we work around the country for public sector on operations and transformation projects. And Ed Mills. Ed, why don't you introduce?
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for joining us. Ed Mills, Chief Procurement Officer at the University of Colorado. I'm in year four over there. Prior to CU, spent the bulk of my career in the aerospace and defense industry. Really happy to have you all here. It's great to see a full room, and yeah. I'm ready to get going. So you want to get us launched?
Yeah, great. And this is intended in a conversation style. I don't really like flipping a bunch of slides with 30 minutes. So we're going to talk about aspects of forming teams, managing teams, thinking about how and where you supplement teams. And this is intended to be interactive. If you guys have questions as we get a couple in, please raise your hand and let's have a discussion. So I called the talk resourceful procurement. We're doing a little play on words on both the need to be resourceful and also the topic about how to think about using our resources well. So Ed, I know that one of your primary focuses in the last year has been really recentering your teams. So why don't we just start with that? Give a definition of the term recentering from your perspective and what you've been doing related to that.
So yeah, Dustin asked me kind of what we've been up to of late, and you know, mentioned this term of recentering, and you know what's behind that, right? Why are we recentering our teams, and what does that actually mean? So as we looked at coming out of COVID and coming into and out of the inflationary periods, supply chain disruption, the Great Resignation, all of those things hit our organization, like I'm sure they hit a lot of your organizations all at once and in sequence. It kind of gave us an opportunity to say, well, where are we in our service delivery to our customers? How are we supporting CU's mission? And what does that look like going forward? What should that look like going forward? And as we took a critical look at the service delivery model, it started to become clear that we needed to make some of these pivot points. And so I'll kind of just talk a little bit about each of the teams and what those recentering pivots, look like. And this was in collaboration with our customers and finding out what they're hoping for and what they're looking for as well. But if you think about our data analytics team and our, the analysis that they had been focusing on over the years had been a lot of like data science heavy, right? A lot of like transformation, ETL, looking at taxonomies and building out the sort of the data crunching side of things. And that was all necessary. But as we kind of looked critically at that function, said, it's time to move towards data consumption, right? It's enough of this data science stuff. We got to start consuming data. We got to start looking at health and status of our functions, not only looking at the activity metrics, but looking at the performance indicators as well. And looking at that from both perspectives of customer side and functional side. Our procurement contracting teams, right? Historically, a lot of like policy-focused, policy-driven service delivery. And we said, why are we so risk-averse? Why are we trying to remove risk from every single contract? We need to reimagine this, right? So we started to look at what does risk tolerance look like? What does risk mitigation look like? Can we build that into our workflows? Can we build that into how we look at our purchasing and contracting functions? And then you get to our customer service and our outreach program, really wanting to build out more knowledge, right? Making knowledge accessible to our customers, building out knowledge articles, knowledge base, and things of that nature. And then on our systems team, our data or our procurement systems team, looking at more of feature adoption, right? So in our full suite P2P, are we adopting the features, in a good way? Are we doing that? Like what's our cadence? What's our rhythm for looking at new feature releases? And then what's the tail of training, right? So we really wanted the team to focus on the tail of training. So as we look at new feature adoptions, looking at training, right? Again, just thinking about not just keeping the system running smoothly, but looking at how can we bring it, keep it current, keep it modern, right? And now those are some of the pivot points and some of the recentering that we did there. Yeah.
So that's talking about how you set up teams. Yeah. One of the things that I mentioned in the preamble to this presentation was then we're charting teams against a potentially really chaotic amount of demand. And we think we have it together, but then something new will come across. One of our other clients, they were talking about how they think they have it together, and then somebody gets some new money, and then something is immediately appearing, and they want it done in 2 weeks. So what, if anything, have you been trying to do to try to put at least a little bit of a baffle at the front of that to be able to know how things are going to come so that you can plan what kind of teams and what kind of capacity that you should have?
Yeah, this is a really challenging question. I think a lot of us in, CU is a large institution. We're an R1 organization. And we look at our demand profile. I'll tell people that we have multiple purchasing environments like all of you do, right? We have, you have a traditional requisition, POs, you have your research base, you have project base, we have aerospace projects that run 3 years, right? We have clinical support that we need to do. And then we have the budget-based model, right? Where people spend their budget and, that budget can have a lot of seasonality to it. One of the things we did recently actually was we sponsored with our business school an internship project where we had a group of interns actually model a little bit of our demand patterns across different environments. We had them go talk to the libraries. We had them go talk to the aerospace group. We had them talk to the medical side, the athletic side. And then they built out like this regression model, right? So now we have these coefficients that we can use to say, okay, if you look at, this type of unit and look at it seasonality or look at it from a supplier standpoint, we then have a coefficient that says you're more likely to have demand in these months or in these periods or under these circumstances. Because trying to get my customers to think about demand planning and demand modeling it's a really hard conversation to have. I don't know if any of you have had success talking to your faculty about planning their demand, but if you have, let me know. I'm all ears. But that's been really challenging to have that level of conversation. So we went at it from the opposite direction, right? We said, what is the data telling us and how can we use that data to then feed back to the administration side on campus and say, this is what we're seeing. Is there a way to maybe aggregate or smooth this out? If nothing else, it allows us to plan our resource allocation in alignment with some of that seasonality. So here's an example, right? So we book about 10 national performers every year at our School of Music up in Boulder. And when we went and talked to them and we showed them some of the data, and we find out that, their tail of when they start booking talent comes much earlier than when they, come to us and say, hey, we've got this contract. We're going to have Wynton Marsalis come and perform. Can you finalize the contract for us, right? So we said, well, how about like when you're starting to engage with the scope of work and talk to these performers like months earlier, can you just let us know that? We'll start working the paper on that, right? So just being aware of what those cycles look like and trying to come into the process maybe a little differently.
Yeah. And before we get into some of the methods, let's hit the other major part. So we talked org, we talked demand. The actual people in the actual chairs. So I know that you had to recruit, and then I think that at one point you combined a couple of things in order to create the position that you wanted. So what are you seeing out there today in terms of the actual response to positions and the ability to keep people in chairs so that you can then make your organization and your demand modeling be functional?
Yes, I mean it's night and day different today. If you put yourself back all a year ago, literally a year ago. And I don't know about your searches, but our searches were yielding like two candidates. I mean, I had some searches where we literally had zero candidates for like weeks. We went back and redid the job posting. We, did a bunch of things. And it was pretty tough out there. I mean, it was really tough out there finding candidates. Fast forward to today, and the candidate pools have rebounded considerably well. And it's a little bit dependent on the function. We have found, interestingly, the deepest candidate pools have come in on the data side and on our payables side, which was kind of surprising to me. I think part of what maybe is with on the data side is because we are still offering full-time remote or primarily remote work, hybrid work arrangements. And as we know, a lot of tech companies are starting to pull that back and ask their employees to be on site. I think that maybe is a little bit. So just thinking about what was our necessity a year ago was to hire, you know, for us, we started opening up for national searches. We started looking at full-time, you know, remote. So we have a number of people that live coast to coast, even though we're in the middle of the country. And today, it's a retention strategy, right? It's not as much a recruiting strategy, but it's definitely a retention strategy. So yeah, the candidate pools have recovered. Are you all seeing that more or less, or are you still struggling in some spaces? You're not. Yeah, I would say contracting is still probably an area of you know, that skill set, I think, is in high demand.
I was going to say, we're using a lot more search firms at lower levels than we have ever done before.
Like retain searches.
Retain search,
wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Big players. So, and that's been a surprise. I've been surprised by that.
Yeah, I was on a panel yesterday with some other CPOs, and one of them reported that they're actually making two offers to procurement people who have no procurement experience. They're just going to train them up because they're in a geography where it's hard to find that skill set, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I have a whole speech on attracting young people to procurement, but that's not what this topic is, but a passion of mine I'm going to allow to slip. In here, we talk about capacity and creative resourcing. So, you know, one thing that my group started doing a year ago was building basically a lab of 15, 20-year people to be able to do work on RFP portfolios for public sector clients with experienced people that we can turn on and off, you know, pay by the drink. And one of the CPOs that we work with calls that elasticity, right? The ability to have some ability to surge up and surge down and not get stuck just because you had one person leave or the rest. And so, you know, there are other kind of staffing models that may look at like interns or temp, but this is a relatively specific kind of a model. And, you know, you've been leveraging that to help you bridge some things and also building it in. So, I mean, if you don't mind, can you talk about how, when you're making decisions about, here's the internal team that I have, here's the work that remains, what are some of the methods that I have to address the work that remains while not burning out my people, like how that became a part of something that you leveraged?
Yeah, again, this is, you know, you think about your resource allocation, what is the demand for those resources, what's available to meet that demand. And, you know, last year when we had fairly significant turnover and we had to just concentrate on like almost literally keeping the lights on, right? I mean, just keeping above the waterline, keeping the university moving, you know, we still had things to do, right? We had solicitations to support, and we know those solicitations are, you know, a heavy lift on the resource side. We had these pivots and recentering initiatives that still needed to get done. And so, you know, I started having these conversations with some of the campus leaders, and we started talking about, well, how does the faculty handle, you know, capacity constraints and whatnot, right? And they use, right, what do they use? They use adjunct professors. And so we started thinking about this adjunct model and saying, well, could procurement have a similar kind of approach to this adjunctcy? And we started playing with that a little bit. And when you look at some of the traditional staffing options out there, right, you go the temp route, or you go to like a 12-month engagement with somebody, you know, and, you know, Dustin and I were chatting one day, and I kind of laid out our challenge and said, you know, what we really could use is like an organization that can just give us expansion of this skill set, right? I need to run solicitations. I need to, you know, do this or that, right? Rather than telling us an advisement, like here's how you could do it, actually do that work as be part of an extension of our team. And that's when he said to me, well, we're launching this thing called Procurement as a Service. So let's have a look at it. And what we like about it is it's an enrollment model, right? Maybe somebody else calls it an elasticity model. We kind of think of it as an enrollment model. We enroll in the program. It doesn't really cost us anything to enroll in it. But we say, sign us up, you know, and then we draw those resources in as needed. And it really played well with leadership because we said, we've got to expand capacity right now. We've gotten behind. We need to expand capacity, but how do we do that without permanent hires and a lot of retention or a lot of recruiting, you know, kind of swirl, right? So we started having these conversations around this adjunct kind of model and approach, and you know, leadership loved it and said, "Yeah, go do that." And so that's where we are, and that's what Dustin and his team has been helping us with.
Yeah. And CU is at a medium to medium large level on some of our clients. There are some people that we're dealing with where they're really small. They got like one or two or three people. And the biggest problem with that situation is if one of those people leaves or any other number of reasons, then huge amounts of knowledge and capacity goes out of the door. So it's not just for big firms. I mean, little firms sometimes, or little entities, have much more risk than the bigger firms because one person leaves and everything's going to break.
Yeah, I see that. And I know talking to some of the smaller schools out there, I know they have that challenge. But, you know, you think about the size of our operation. We're centralized procurement. There is no campus procurement. It's all us. And we're a volume-based function. I mean, I think we touch 158,000 invoices every year, right? So if you miss a day of invoice processing, you got backlog. You miss 2 days, 3 days, it gets rough quick. Right. And so I don't think the challenge is much different for us in that regard, that, you know, once we start to get a little bit behind in volume, I mean, we had an IRS rule change that happened and we had to adjust some of our business expense processes, which is putting, you know, faculty and staff on the hook for their business expenses for taxable income, which they absolutely love that. Well, it drove a huge spike in service desk tickets, right? And so, you know, we got behind there because everyone's asking, why am I getting penalized for going on a business trip? And it's like, well, that's not quite how it works. All right, so, but again, you get behind and you've got to figure out, okay, how do we get caught back up? Because there is no other, like, peer mm-hmm. function to go do this work. I think having access to people who know what to do, who know the environment, can have a conversation and lead a group of campus leaders through a particular effort, or, you know, can kind of talk the lingo and understand the sensitivities that are in public procurement. You know, that's definitely an advantage to have that.
I have one other one that I can take us to, but we got a full room, which is great, and lots of smart people in here who may have questions or who are solving problems in a way they want to talk about. So let's see if we can get one or two of you to jump in.
Yes, I have a question. So if I bring someone like him on board, Dustin, is it? I'm trying to figure out, when I run something, I'm interacting with the vendor. I'm dealing with the issues, right? Are you deputizing Dustin to do that? I'm trying to figure out, how does he negotiate on your behalf?
Yeah, this is a great question. It's a little bit of a shadow model. So we haven't, you know, they don't have a warrant, right? We haven't really deputized them from that perspective. Our buyers are still the ones releasing the event publicly. They're still the ones collecting, you know, the bids. They'll make the award. They'll do the award documentation. But what Dustin's team is able to bring to us is that reach of knowledge and process know-how, right? And yeah, they will be doing some advisement on strategy around negotiations or on price analysis and things of that nature. What I noticed actually was a little bit of a lessons learned for us is, and I mean this in the nicest way possible, right? Some of their folks are, they're somewhat disinterested parties of, you know, running this solicitation through the mechanism. Meaning, like, when my folks handle a solicitation with high profile campus customers, like provost level, CFO level, like, they over-index too much on customer care. So they allow the team to, like, swirl a little bit. Like, well, we haven't really read the proposals yet. We're not ready, you know, and right? But what I found with some of Dustin's professionals is they're like, well, they kind of, like, let that noise, like, fall to the side. And they just keep the evaluation committee moving forward. And that's really needed, right? That's really necessary.
And not to be too micro, but if what the project needs is to take it all the way to the end, we can take it all the way to the end. If it's take it to camera-ready specs and give it back, then then it can be that kind of activity. And all these people will be 15, 20 year procurement people. That's the model. So in terms of that interface point with the buyers, they're meeting weekly, there's a portfolio, they're running it through. So, you know, we try to present it as it's a whole found team. Like it's a team that can take stuff up and pick it up. And to me, the biggest reason that that is valuable, it's not that perhaps you could drive the internal team to push it through and drive it through, but I think at some point, if there's too much work to do, then the only two ways that you can bend are either the solicitation work is going to be lower quality or you're going to burn out your team. So it's not that you couldn't just drive the machines at 120%, but then it goes right back, it puts you right back in that hiring mill, right? Where maybe you burn somebody out and they take a different job and now you have to refill. So to me, having creative resourcing as an extension helps you with your goals on quality and work-life experience.
Absolutely. And you know, think about you've got a number of new individuals entering the organization. Some are coming in with some public institution experience. Others are coming in with private experience. And so they're trying to figure out, okay, what's the environment I'm operating in? What's the playbook? What's the rule set that I have to follow? And you lay on top of that a strategic enrollment management plan, RFP, that's going to take, you know, 10 hours a week for the next 12 weeks of their time. And they're like, I'm still trying to learn the basics, right? So that's part of the strategy is allowing that onboarding experience to be orderly and, you can absorb the knowledge that they need to absorb. The other piece of it is, are the team members who have been around a while, they're trying to transfer knowledge to some of these newer personnel. So to saddle them with large solicitations is going to pull that time, that bandwidth away from them. So they're underserving some of the new hires in favor of supporting these large RFPs, right? So for us, it was a pretty easy decision to say, all right, if I can take, you know, I don't know, X number of these large solicitations and resource them differently, I can reserve that capacity for bringing in, you know, the new folks and helping the experienced individuals transfer that knowledge again. So the question was, how do we kind of guesstimate our resource requirements based on new solicitations or recompetes or renewals, you know, that sort of thing? And so, you know, we have our sourcing wave plan where we look at our strategic agreements. When are they coming due? You know, what? And then we T-shirt size them, right? So you say, okay, based on, you know, this is a small, so we expect it's going to be a 4-month effort, right? A large might be a 12-month effort, right? You kind of look at that and start building in that. So that body of work that I just mentioned is not complete, right? So still kind of working on building that model out. But that's part of it is saying, what's our internal capacity for these type of strategic relationships that we have, and you know, what does that runway look like? So that starts with that. And then you have the new efforts, some of which we've known about that, you know, we knew about the strategic enrollment plan for a while, but it was like, it was in the background. It was background noise. And then anyone ever had this experience? You get the call from, you know, the campus CFO, oh, we're ready to go. Right? Like, oh, okay, thanks. So, you know, you get that kind of call. It's like, this thing that we've been talking about for 18 months, now we're doing it. It's real. Let's go. So we get that a lot, of course. And then you get it's rare that you get a campus or a system level to tell you, okay, we're going to do this thing 6 months from now. The start date is June 1st. The end date is December 1st. Plan it, right? That almost never happens, right? So again, need to be a bit, you know, you got to be flexible, you got to be on your toes, but you need to have the ability to support those things because either you're going to underserve it or you're going to let the campus will just do what they do and you're just going to be left holding the bag at the end. Yeah. Yeah.
And as you said, having us as an asset doesn't cost you anything if you don't use it. So that's part of the sign up part. It's an extension of the team.
Yeah, so. That's right. And so another example, like to kind of go along those lines was, we had this JV effort. We're going to build a childcare facility and partner with, you know, so we're one of our campuses, medical facility has a, you know, we have a healthcare you know, hospital, and then there's you know, CU Health Hospital, it's like, you know, attached to it, we're going to do this thing, and co-share, and you know, they got into the real estate and all this stuff. And so, you know, we started turning the crank on how to support that. And then, you know, 3 months later, it just, it died for various reasons, right? And that happens a lot, right? Where you're like, you turn the crank, you get ready to support this thing, and then it goes away, right?
Well, we're going to try to stay on time and let you guys make sure you have time to get a drink and whatever on the way out. So I want to thank Ed for taking the time, and thank you guys for the full room. And let us know if you want to talk. Hi, it's Dustin Lanier. Thanks for listening. Please find me on LinkedIn for original public sector operations content every week. And please reach out to me if I and my team of procurement professionals at Civic Initiatives can help you be a public procurement change agent.